I was just thinking, if only Sean Spicer had said back a year ago that it was the largest crowd of Russians that had ever been gathered for a presidential inaugural, we could have stayed out of the whole controversy. It's remarkable.
He'd still be there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 238. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. And first, I want to do some housekeeping, and then I want to get into today's subjects. So, the Logan Act and the Hatch Act, when I was talking about the partisan message that was sent out by the president last week via the White House message machine, I said that he violated the Logan Act. He, in fact, violated the Hatch Act, and I want to give you the definition of each. Whenever I make a mistake on this program, I'd like to be the one who corrects it. So, the Hatch Act is a 1939 piece of United States federal legislation which prohibits federal employees, employees of the District of Columbia, and certain employees of state and local governments from engaging in partisan political activity. The act was named after Senator Carl Hatch of New Mexico, who protested the political involvement of federal employees in primaries and general elections and sponsored the bill that became the Hatch Act. So, whenever they do political fundraising for their campaigns, what they do in D.C. is supposed to be for you. But then when they're trying to get reelected, a lot of it's partisan. And, of course, when they're dialing for dollars, this is why they have to have a separate office. And that's because of the Hatch Act. So the Logan Act, which the president is clearly in violation of, but that's not what he was in violation of when he sent out that partisan message. The Logan Act, quoting here, any citizen of the United States, wherever he may be, who, without authority of the United States directly or indirectly, commences or carries on any correspondence or intercourse with any foreign government or any officer or agent in thereof, with intent to influence the measures or conduct of any foreign government or of any officer or agent thereof, in relation to any disputes or controversies with the United States or to defeat the measures of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. Get to know the Logan Act, because it's going to become news real fast, ladies and gentlemen.
Specifically, what was your designated role in the decision to fire Director Comey?
It is, it's a matter that I can share some information about, because the president himself has talked about it and revealed that letter. He asked that Deputy Rosenstein and I make our recommendations in writing. We prepared those recommendations and submitted it to the president. Senator Feinstein, I don't think it's been fully understood the significance of the error that Mr. Comey made on the Clinton matter.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions, talking about the firing of the head of the FBI, which was James Comey. Now, Comey, we're going to do a timeline here because we get into the memo. I'll explain what this freaking memo is, which I've been hearing about for weeks, not because it's in the news, but because I listen to right-wing radio. So Jeff Sessions on Comey. So he recuses himself from the Russia investigation, and he had to do so because he was deeply involved with the Trump campaign. And so it was the right thing for him to do, to go ahead and step aside and recuse himself. But when it came to firing Comey, Congress said, hey, where did this come from? Why did we decide to fire Comey? What's the problem with Comey? And of course, why we fired Comey came from all over the place.
I think the president was given a recommendation by the deputy attorney general, who the FBI director reports to. The attorney general concurred with that the FBI director had lost the confidence to lead the FBI, and the president took their recommendation and agreed with it.
Did anyone at the White House order the Department of Justice to do this review into FBI Director Comey?
No.
So the problem with Comey was that he was overseeing the Russia investigation. So there's a gentleman that is in that chair now, and his name is Rod Rosenstein, and he is acting as the head of the FBI, not really the head of the FBI. the timeline on this is kind of fuzzy, but when Trump became president, he felt like he didn't just win the presidency. He won all of the power. Everybody now works for him. Everybody now has to do what he says. And when there was this investigation, he said, now, wait a minute, I'm the president and you can't have that. And he thought that because he picked such a hardcore partisan, somebody shares not just his views on the justice system, but also shares his views on race and the economy and so many other things. He really thought that he was going to be able to depend on Jeff Sessions. And then Jeff Sessions went ahead and decided to recuse himself because I suppose the guy has some sense of the law, some tact about him. And of course, that just pissed off Trump.
Well, I don't think I am doing that, but I am disappointed in the attorney general. He should not have recused himself almost immediately after he took office. And if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me prior to taking office, and I would have quite simply picked somebody else. I'm very disappointed with the attorney general, but we will see what happens. Time will tell. Time will tell.
This is what we do. This is how we avoid something called conflicts of interest, which is something that Trump swears he has no conflicts of interest, no idea what you're talking about. He's got all these businesses that he still makes money on. He's got all these foreign heads of state that he still does business with. He's still collecting money from his businesses. He's spending taxpayer money at his businesses. He has no freaking idea what you're talking about, these conflicts of interest. And every time he opens his mouth without anybody there counseling him, he says something dumb.
I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won.
This Russia thing with Trump and Russia, it's interesting the way he talks about himself. And so right there, he says, I fired him because of the Russia investigation. And then Trump invites these Russians from the Kremlin into the White House. And he says, we know this from reports from people that were there. He says to them, hey, we're not going to have to worry about this Russia investigation anymore because I fired Comey. Following so far? That's how we ended up with the Mueller investigation, or the Mueller investigation. I will say Mueller because there's an E in his name. That's how we ended up with the Mueller investigation, because Congressman, whoa, he just admitted to potentially breaking the law, obstruction of justice. So the Mueller investigation looks like it's going to start producing some fruit. So far, we have four people that have pleaded guilty and are going to be indicted, going to be tried in court, people that worked for the Trump transition team, or they worked for the Trump campaign, or they worked in the Trump administration. There's Papadopoulos, there's Flynn, blah, blah, blah. And so now the investigation has said, hey, we'd like to talk to Donald Trump. And so the Republicans are trying to find a way to run interference. And they don't care what it takes. They will take down the entire government to protect this guy. And it's not because they think that he's so awesome. He won. He won the presidency. And Republicans don't particularly care about government anyway. And so now they're running interference. And they say, hey, we're just going to take down the entire government if that's what it takes to protect him and to protect our agenda as Republicans. And then I'm listening to right-wing radio a couple weeks ago. And I'm listening to the Sean Hannity show. I know, something wrong with me. And Sean has these two people on. And they go, Sean, there's a dang gum secret memo. Have you heard about the memo? The memo? What memo? Memo. There's a memo? What memo? Memo, 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 memo? What memo is this?
What I read today in that classified briefing room is as bad as I thought it was.
You are describing the very elements of a palace coup. And after Jim and Mark Meadows and many others of us reviewed the intelligence information today, it is abundantly clear that the entire Mueller investigation is a lie built on a foundation of corruption.
Hashtag release the memo starts getting spread by the usual outfits, right-wing media, the white supremacist websites, Drudge, Fox News. But then it also starts getting shared and overly shared by the Russian bots, by the Twitter bots, but Twitter bots and Facebook bots. We are tracking a lot of what Russia does right now. So there's official parts of our government that are following what Russia's doing with respect to social media. But there's also people that just have an interest in this stuff that are tracking what the Russian bots are doing as well. And all of a sudden, the sites, the people that we know are Russian bots, which are – you just create them and they all do the same thing. It seems like they're different people. They've got different names. They've got different profile pictures. But it's really just a handful of people that are creating all these bots. And so what happens is something starts trending. And then hashtag release the memo starts trending a little bit on its own, which is to say via the people that listen to right-wing media. But then there's all these Russian bots sharing it. Why the hell are the Russian bots sharing it? And of course, that's obviously embarrassing for the conservative media. So Limbaugh, right, and I'll play the Limbaugh clip. Limbaugh says really what all the other conservatives are, dang gummit, these Twitter bots, these created by the Democrats.
The Schumer shutdown also, you know, that was Mick Mulvaney's term, and they're trying to establish that Twitter bots picked that up, that most people don't consider it the Schumer shutdown, that most people think the Democrats won the shutdown. But is Twitter screwing us? These are the people, again, that created the entire premise of using bots to flood the zone with supposed millions of people thinking alike politically who were opposed to conservatism, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, you name it. And now they're claiming to be victims of all of this at the hands of the Russians.
The thinking on the right is that when the people promote something that is conservative, then that's truly what the people want. And if they're promoting something that is not conservative, well, that's clearly nothing but a bunch of bots. That's all stuff that the Democrats are making up. And now the Democrats are just mad because we won this whole shutdown thing. And yeah, it's likely that the conservatives did win the showdown over the shutdown for any number of reasons. One, they don't care. And so they play the game to win. Democrats are better at governing and Republicans are better at playing politics. Another example. Then there's this secret society. So I start hearing about the memo. Hashtag release the memo. They're freaking out all over the place. Fox News, Drudge, the white supremacist websites. Release the memo. It's the secret memo, right? This is information that they are privy to, but my God, they just can't release it yet. And then there's this talk about secret societies. And this is started by Ron Johnson, another wackadoodle righty. And where does the idea of the secret society come from?
And that secret society, we have an informant that's talking about a group that were holding secret meetings off-site. There's so much smoke here. There's so much suspicion.
Let's stop there. A secret society, a secret meetings off-site of the Justice Department.
Correct.
And you have an informant saying that.
Yes.
So that's Neil Cavuto talking with Ron Johnson. And what you don't get from that particular clip is Neil Cavuto just giving Ron Johnson the side eye. Are you freaking kidding me? There's a secret society. So now there's a secret memo and a secret society. This is tinfoil hat stuff. So where does the secret society come from? So Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who used to work on the Mueller team. Of course, they were pulled off of it when all of these text messages that they had shared. I think there were somewhere in the neighborhood of, these are prolific texters, 7,000 text messages that these two had shared with each other during the course of the election. And most of it's pretty benign stuff. They're talking about, you know, how are you? How do you feel today? You know, dumb stuff that people that text each other back and forth talk about. But then they also get into other stuff. There's lots of anti-Trump texts that they share. They call Trump a douche, among other things. And then, so on Fox News, they go, oh my God, they work for the Mueller team and they're anti-Trump. Wait a minute. They're anti-everybody and everything. They talked about how much they didn't like Bernie Sanders. They talked about how much they didn't like Hillary Clinton. But of course, the focus becomes, look, as soon as Mueller found out about these texts, they were kicked off the team. They were reassigned, just like that. And then it went on for several months before conservatives found out about these texts. And then they make it like these two still work for the Mueller team and the entire Mueller team must just be tainted. We have to stop this entire investigation because the entire thing is just built on a foundation of lies and nah. And the secret society thing, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page shared the day after the election. Of course, distraught over the results of the election, which it sounds like they were going to be distraught no matter what. So they send a joking text. I think Lisa sent it to Peter. And she says, so is it time for the first meeting of the secret society? And this one text, this becomes a major, massive, screaming headline over in conservative media.
There's a text exchange between these two FBI agents, these two supposed to be objective, fact-centric FBI agents saying, perhaps this is the first meeting of the secret society. So, of course, I'm going to want to know, what secret society are you talking about?
Tinfoil hat. There is no secret society. So you got Ron Johnson, and Ron Johnson's asked about it the next day and kind of worms out of it. But Trey Gowdy doesn't give an F. So Trey Gowdy spreads it. Trey Gowdy, by the way, just this past week announced that he's not going to run for re-election. So he's getting the hell out of Congress. So this is something like 20, 25 Republican seats in the House that are going to be open because these Republicans are leaving. So Ron Johnson shares it. Trey Gowdy shares it. And then the entire right-wing media sphere just goes crazy with it.
It may be time to declare war outright against the deep state and clear out the rot in the upper levels of the FBI and the Justice Department.
The whole apple is solid, but there are worms that have eaten their way all through the upper leadership. We need a house cleaning.
Illustrate a conspiracy on the part of some people, and we want to know a lot more about that. So we'll be continuing our joint judiciary oversight investigation.
This makes Watergate look like, you know, stealing a Snickers bar from your local candy store. It's that big, it's that corrupt, it's that deep, it's that profound.
I'm not surprised there's a secret society within the establishment that was designed to get rid of Trump, to deny Trump the election. We were never supposed to know any of this.
Yeah, you're not supposed to know any of it because none of it's true. And what we learned recently is that Sean Hannity has been advising Donald Trump. And I think it was on Fox News the other night. I forget which anchor he was talking to, but there was someone on Fox, and they turned to Hannity because there's really Republicans, and Trump especially, can do no wrong in the eyes of one Sean Hannity. And so this anchor just turns to Sean and goes, you know, Sean, had you been around during Watergate, I don't think Nixon would have ever resigned.
Who's in the secret society? Let's see, could it be Page and Strzok and McCabe and Comey and, let's see, Bruce Orr? Could it be Rod Rosenstein? Who else is in the special secret society?
So the memo on the secret society, all they're doing is trying to run interference for the president because it's absolutely, it's embarrassing. And this is likely going to end worse than Watergate unless, of course, they are able to change the narrative. But Mueller's getting closer and closer and closer to the president. And so finally, in a moment where Trump lets his guard down, reporters have him and his lawyers aren't around. And Trump loves to talk. He loves to get in front of cameras. He didn't always have anything to say. You know, he mostly speaks in hyperbole. But these reporters get him in the room, and they say, "Hey, Mr. President, let's talk about Mueller. You have nothing to hide, right? Let us talk about Mueller."
Are you going to talk to Mueller?
I'm looking forward to it, actually.
You want to? Do you have a date set?
Here's the story, just so you understand. There's been no collusion whatsoever. Yeah. There's no obstruction whatsoever. And I'm looking forward to it.
Do you have a date set, Mr. Speaker?
I don't know. No, I guess they're talking about 2 or 3 weeks, but I would love to do it.
No collusion, no obstruction. Oh, my God, I would just love to talk about it. And, of course, they dug into the obstruction thing a little bit more, and they go, but you're being looked at for obstruction. Not that you're going to admit anything to us, sir, but would you like to talk about the potential obstruction?
Do you think Robert Mueller will be fair to you in this larger investigation?
We're going to find out.
Are you concerned about
it? Because here's what we'll say, and everybody says, no collusion. There's no collusion. Now they're saying, did he fight back? You fight back.
What is collusion?
Sir, you fight back. Done. You fight back. Oh, it's obstruction.
So the case that he's making is all he did was fight back. And because he fought back, that's considered collusion. And so they say, sir, you're excited. You want to talk to Mueller. Great. When can we expect that?
Mr. President.
You mean like Hillary did it under? Who said that?
I said that.
Oh.
Did you do it under oath?
You said it. You did say it. You say a lot. Did Hillary do it under oath?
I have no idea, but I'm not asking.
I think you have an idea.
Do
don't you have an
idea?
You?
Do you think
it'll
be fair?
Wait. Do you not have an idea? Do you really not have an idea?
I really don't remember.
I'll give you an idea. She didn't do it under oath. But I would do it under oath. Listen, but I would do it. And you know she didn't do it under oath,
she
right?
She would do it under oath.
If you didn't know about Hillary, then you're not much of a reporter.
So you're going to do it under oath?
Say it.
To reach a higher standard, you would do it under oath.
Oh, I would do it under oath, yeah. Absolutely.
He always does this thing where he has to go back to attacking her. And someone says, will you do it under oath? Which, by the way, is a wicked weird question, because when you talk to the FBI, and they got Papadopoulos on this, because Papadopoulos lied to the FBI, so he's indicted for lying to the FBI. He didn't get indicted because he was under oath. It's already a crime. You do not have to be under oath. You talk to the FBI, you lie to the FBI, that's a crime. They don't have to put you under oath. So when he said this, that he'd be willing to go under oath, what he said, and he didn't realize it, what he was effectively saying completely by accident was that he'd be willing to take an oath and go in front of the grand jury. So he says he's looking forward to talking to Mueller, and he would do it under oath. Not even a half an hour later, his lawyers had to issue a retraction or a correction. Because he had no idea what he was saying. And so, once again, the conservative media finds out that he got loose with the mouth again. And they decided that they're going to start running interference. And the new talking point, and by the way, the memo is nothing more than a right-wing talking point that has been written on paper. These right-wing talking points, One of these days, I'm going to see that what I refer to as a white sheet, and of course I call it a white sheet because these are all white people. One of these days, I'm going to get my hands on one of these white sheets. I listen to conservative talk all the time, and I listen to some liberal talk. There's not a ton of liberal talk, but there's an entire buffet of right-wing talk. And they all say the exact same thing, but I've never, ever seen, say, a sheet that has the list of talking points, but they all get on the exact same page and say the exact same stuff. So what makes Limbaugh, say, more popular than some other right-wing hosts? Well, Limbaugh doesn't take a lot of phone calls. He opens the mic and he go, go, go. And if you want to call in and challenge Limbaugh, it's very unlikely that you're going to get on the air. And so because nobody's being challenged, I think that's one of the – well, plus Limbaugh's been there for a while. I think it's one of the things that makes Limbaugh more popular than some of the others. So here's the other thing they're doing, the perjury trap. And, of course, it starts with one Roger Stone.
Under no circumstances should he grant Mr. Mueller an interview. It's a suicide mission. It's a very clear perjury trap.
Perjury trap! Perjury trap! Oh my God. So Roger Stone says it, right? And Roger Stone used to work for the Nixon administration. And although it's been rumored, I haven't seen it, but he's got a gigantic Richard Nixon tattoo on his back. So we know where Roger Stone is, and then it starts spreading to right-wing radio.
There are conflicting opinions on whether or not Trump has to talk to Mueller, whether he should. He shouldn't. If you ask me, don't do it. I don't care what format, I don't care what circumstances, don't do it. There's nothing to gain.
There's nothing to gain by going out there, because they know what this guy is going to do. If he gets in front of Mueller, and he's, you know, say he doesn't, especially if he doesn't have his lawyers there, and I don't think he gets to have them there, they know that he's going to perjure himself because the guy can't stop effing lying.
Trump improvises as he goes. I just think it's a rotten idea. It's just a perjury trap. Even if Mueller's not setting it up as a perjury trap, it still is one.
It's only a perjury trap because the guy can't stop lying. Trump improvises. Of course, if anyone else of the Democratic persuasion makes a statement and it turns out to even be a little bit not true, then that Democrat is a full-blown liar. Liar, liar, pants on fire, 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 fuego. But Trump, no, Trump just improvises. So right-wing media runs the interference for him. And then the lawyers speak up about it, because what Trump wanted to do was, he says, how about this? I will sign an affidavit saying that I, one, Donald John Trump, am completely innocent. I did not collude, and I've never done anything wrong ever, and I will write this on a piece of paper, and I will sign my name to it, and that's as good as gold, he says. And then the Trump lawyers say, we're afraid of him talking. The reason we want to do this letter, they won't explicitly say this, but they're implying it. We want to do the letter because our client can't seem to stop lying.
But you can certainly also understand why the people who are representing the president might prefer to have him do a lot of this in writing, just because this is a guy who we've seen world leaders do it. We've seen members of Congress do it. He's very susceptible to flattery. I've spoken with attorneys here in Washington who in recent years before he was president, but not too long ago, deposed Donald Trump in other lawsuits and said, you know, if you compliment his kids and have a couple nice minutes of banter with him, he'll give you everything you need. And so you can understand why some of these attorneys are nervous about letting the president go into this meeting with Bob Mueller, not knowing everything that the special counsel knows. The lawyers, for good reason, probably a lot more nervous than the president himself might be heading into such a meeting.
Lawyers know this. World leaders know this. Journalists know this. Get him in a room. Say something nice to him. Say something nice about his kids. Compliment, you know, his job as president. Or something like that. Talk about how big his hands are or how big his crowd is. And eventually he's going to give away the farm. And so this is why even his lawyers have begun using the right-wing talking point about a perjury trap.
I would hope that a fair-minded Office of Special Counsel would approach it in a dutiful way, consistent with precedent, and it wouldn't be a mere perjury trap. Believe him.
Do you have any fear of a perjury trap?
No, but I think it would be foolish to, you know, not proceed without considering that possibility.
There was quite the gap there. Do you believe it's a perjury trap? Silence, 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 silence. No. And how about collusion? In that same meeting where Trump is talking with the journalists and nobody else is around, they say, so no collusion. Are you sure about that? And it appears that the president, by the way, 59 million wingnuts and morons voted for this guy. And he cannot define collusion. Maybe that's why he keeps saying that there's no collusion, because he doesn't know what it is.
So how do you define collusion? And Maggie asked this earlier during the briefing to Sarah, but how do you
You're going to define it for me, okay? But I can tell you, there's no collusion. I couldn't have cared less about Russians having to do with my campaign. The fact is, you people won't say this, but I'll say it. I was a much better candidate than her. You always say she was a bad candidate. You never say I was a good candidate. I was one of the greatest candidates. Nobody else would have beaten the Clinton machine, as crooked as it was. But I was a great candidate. Someday you're going to say that.
He still lives in 2016. It's so weird. Tell me how great I am. Please tell me how great I am. And of course, because Dum Dum said something dumb again, here comes the right-wing media running more interference for him. So we're going to find out that there was collusion. So if you tune in into Hannity and Levin and Limbaugh and all these guys, you'll find that they've started moving their talking points towards saying that collusion is not a crime.
And I was just watching a little bit on Fox during the break, and some well-known leftist is trying to sound like she is on the cutting edge. I think the Mueller investigation, I really believe that we're moving on now to obstruction. I think the collusion angle, I think Mueller is focused. The reason she said that is because she knows that there is nothing to, first off, collusion is not a crime. What they mean by it, Russia and Trump conspired to cheat Hillary and steal the election. And there's no evidence for it. And it's pretty much acknowledged now. It may not be reported. The drive-bys are not reporting this. But all the smart money inside the Beltway knows that that has bombed out, that there's nothing there.
The drive-by. He calls them the drive-by media because he loves using those kinds of terms, because that puts the drive-by, because of our the Hollywood culture that covered all the gang violence, and of course the actual gang violence that happened, the word drive-by puts in people's heads the visions of brown and black people. Limbaugh, he doesn't need much to invoke race. So what's happening with all of this? Because so many conservatives are working so hard to protect him right now. You know, they're babysitting him. They're on diaper duty and all this other stuff. What they're doing in the course of this whole thing by trying to protect him, making up excuses for him, I don't know why you wouldn't just pick somebody less crooked. Fine. But what they're doing is they're destroying the Justice Department. They're destroying the FBI. Think about how we end up with some of the cases that we end up with. They're saying that if you are partisan at all against someone else, you cannot be believed. You cannot say anything about them. If you do not like Trump, you cannot say anything about him and be believed because you have a clear bias. But we have people that go to the FBI and the Justice Department and tell on people that they don't like all the time. You don't tell on people that you do like. So to say that we're not going to listen to anybody that might have a bias, not investigate what anybody says, well, what we're going to end up with is a lot fewer people because of how much damage they're doing to the FBI and to the Justice Department. And I've never had a huge problem with either of these agencies. There have been heads of these agencies, like Gonzalez with Bush, that I really didn't particularly care for, but I've never said that agency can't be trusted, or that we shouldn't have that agency. I think the Justice Department does a lot of good work. I think that the FBI does a lot of good work. But there's a ton of irreparable damage being done to both the FBI and the Justice Department right now. And it's done all in the name of protecting this one guy who is clearly, clearly a criminal.
This notion that Trump seems to have, that everybody's loyal to him, the FBI is somehow his, the FBI is not an independent agency, is extremely, extremely troubling. It goes toward really the rule of law in our society and all of our notion of law and order in our society. So he's doing possibly irreparable damage to the FBI and its reputation, all because of him, all because he puts his own interests first above those of national security.
So this memo that was super duper duper hyped for the last number of weeks came out finally. So I'm taping on Friday. And I waited until today for this particular reason. So this thing finally comes out. And there's absolutely nothing in it. Couple of things. They said it was going to shut down the Mueller investigation. It was going to show that the Mueller investigation is just built on a foundation of lies. And it came out and it said nothing about the Mueller investigation. And I've read any number of laws, either in whole or in part, after they were passed by the Congress, because I was curious with what the media was saying about the laws, how much of that was fact. And so I go read them myself. But they're very hard to read. Remember, Congress is full of lawyers. And when they write these laws, they're not written in plain language. They're written in lawyer language. So this memo is about three or four pages, four if I'm not mistaken. And it's and so they're talking for weeks. Hashtag release the memo. Twitter bots, the Russian bots, and all the and I'm writing, release it. Remember, they freaked out on Hillary Clinton because they said that she was sharing classified information on a private server. Not that she was going to the media with classified information, going, here's some classified information, run with it. She was sharing it on an on a private email server, and that's irresponsible. And how effing dare she do that? How dare she put our national security at risk? But now, the Republicans, in this memo, have decided to put classified information. And Congress can't declassify it. It has to be declassified by the presidency, by the president, by the executive branch. So here's the way it goes. Devin Nunes, who's working hand in glove with this administration, realizes how close Mueller is getting to President Donald Trump and decides to write this memo and then starts an entire campaign around it. What he really did was he wrote this memo with the White House. We'll find that out later. So he writes it with the White House, and he's done this before. And then he hits the media and goes, oh, I got this memo, and it's a secret, and everybody should know what's in it. And then right-wing media does their part, just spreading, you know, promoting it like crazy. And, oh, my God, it's gonna change everything. And then, you know, of course, it's classified. So the president, before he even reads it, decides he wants to declassify it. And then they go, whoa, don't you at least want to read it first, sir? Now, remember, this guy doesn't read. So he waits a little while, and then he finally declassifies it, sends it back to the House releases it. And the way this memo is written, it's written in plain language, not the lawyerly language that I usually see when it comes to laws that I read all the time. It's written in this incredibly plain language. You know, blaming Hillary and everybody else for all these problems and blaming the Justice Department and blaming the FBI. And it's pretty clear based on the way that this thing was written that it was always meant to be released to the public. And this is nothing more than them running more interference for the president. So now this thing has been released. Hillary Clinton shares classified information on a private server. World coming to an end. Trump willingly declassifies his classified information after the FBI said that they had grave concerns about this thing getting out because of the classified information, grave concerns. And the Democrats said that they wanted to release a memo to clean up all of the crap that was in the Republican memo. Republicans vote, we're going to release the Republican memo, the Nunes memo. And they vote on the Democratic memo. We're not going to release that one. The argument that they're making is that in the interest of transparency, we need to release the memo. Democrats go, well, let's release ours too. And they go, no, we don't want to be that transparent. So the thing that we're watching for now is Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to get fired. Speculation is that with the release of this, Trump is going to go to the give him a few days, go to the deputy attorney general. He might fire him by the time this show comes out. The show comes out on Monday. He might fire Rosenstein this weekend, or it might be in the next week or two. And then when he fires Rosenstein, he'll put somebody else in that position as deputy attorney general. And that deputy attorney general will be willing to fire Mueller. And then you're going to have the Saturday night massacre on our hands.
You know, I think it's important to take a step back and understand what, you know, you call this bombshell New York Times report actually means, this idea that the president tried to fire Mueller. I really do think that we are very possibly seeing the end of the Trump presidency as a result of those revelations. And those are not words I use lightly, but this is the first time I've said anything like this.
That's Neil Katyal. He's the former acting Solicitor General of the United States and presently serves as a partner at Hogan Lovells and the Saunders and a Saunders Professor of National Security Law at Georgetown University. He wrote an article called "Yes, Trump Can Fire Mueller, but a normal president would not try it." Quoting here, Trump and his defenders are already pointing out is that he does have the raw power to fire Mueller. But that is the least important of the questions. Instead, we should focus on what this revelation means for the future of the rule of law in America and the Trump administration. Only one previous president attempted to remove a special prosecutor, and things did not work out all that well for Richard Nixon. Mueller is appointed under a special counsel regulation that he had the privilege of drafting almost two decades ago, referring to Neil Katyal. The idea was to replace the unaccountable independent counsel system, which had allowed Ken Starr of the Whitewater and Monica Lewinsky fame and Lawrence Walsh of the Iran-Contra to operate free of ordinary checks and balances with something more calibrated. There was wide bipartisan consensus that law enforcement investigations ultimately had to be overseen by the president under Article 2 of the Constitution. What this meant was that there was no way to totally insulate a special counsel from being removed by the president. Yes, the president might first have to order the regulations rescinded or demand that the Justice Department fire the prosecutor. But one way or another, he'd have the raw power to fire even a counsel investigating his own actions. But because of the constitutional reality, the Justice Department, working with Congress, devised a mechanism to try to protect the special counsel in another way. But that doesn't mean that it's going to stop Trump from doing it. I believe what Neil Katyal says. I think that we really are seeing the end of the Trump administration. With one of my earlier shows for the new year, I said, hey, I don't think that he's going to last through the end of the year. And with as fast as a Mueller investigation is moving, it appears that is indeed the case. It's just going to take a little bit of time. And yeah, we're going to suffer some, at least short-term, seemingly irreparable damage. But yo, we got to stick with it. Got to stay strong. I know this stuff is exhausting, but you got to stay on top of this. Because there's going to come a time that you and I got to hit the streets.
Penetrating. It's not just Fox News. I collected the four top headlines, four most read pieces on Real Clear Politics last night. Here are the headlines. Evidence suggests a massive scandal is brewing at the FBI. That's one. No choice but to appoint a special second counsel. That's the second most read. The FBI is looking guilty as hell in the Russia probe. That's the third. Fourth is the stench at Obama's Justice Department and FBI. That's what the country is reading right now by a very deliberate effort, as you said, to distract. The next round that plays is Mueller's actual conversation with Trump. That's where we'll be in another week or two. But I do think this is we're seeing the fog machine working full blast, and it's obviously having an effect.
It's not news that fiction is a lot more entertaining than reality. And those are the stories that tend to draw you in more, Realizing the role that they played in the 2016 elections, Facebook has recently announced that they are going to change their news feed and that it's no longer going to be news-centric, which is good and bad. First of all, the false news, that stuff, isn't going to spread as far and as fast anymore. But of course, the flip side of that is that the real news isn't going to spread all that well either. The media fog machine. What's happening right now is a war for your mind. And they're using fear because fear is a mind killer. And what they're doing in effect is enslaving all of us. But we are willing participants in this game because we've begun to identify with our captors. From Frederick Douglass's book, The Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, Frederick Douglass wrote this about being a slave. Quote, "Slaves are like other people and imbibe prejudices quite common to others. They think that their own better than others. Many under the influence of this prejudice think their own masters are better than the masters of other slaves. And this too in some cases, when the very reverse is true. Indeed, it is not uncommon for slaves even to fall out and quarrel among themselves about the relative goodness of their masters, each contending for the superior goodness of his own over that of others. It was so on our plantation. When Colonel Lloyd's slaves met with the slaves of Jacob Jepson, they seldom parted without a quarrel about their masters. Colonel Lloyd's slaves contended that he was the richest. Mr. Jepson's slaves said that he was the smartest. Colonel Lloyd's slaves would boast about his ability to buy and sell Jacob Jepson. Mr. Jepson's slaves would boast his ability to whip Colonel Lloyd. These quarrels would almost end in a fight between the parties, almost always ended a fight between the parties, and those that whipped were supposed to have gained the point at issue. They seemed to think that the greatness of their masters was transferable to themselves. It was considered as being bad enough to be a slave, but to be a poor man's slave was deemed a disgrace indeed." So we've began identifying with our masters, and they don't have our best interest at hand. I'll say openly sometimes when I hear folks talk about Trump, "I think he's broke." "My God, what did you just say?" "I think he's broke." "How did..." And one of the things that helped sweep him into office was, look how rich he is. He must have done something right. Look how rich he is. "He's broke. My stars and garters, how dare you." But how he does is not how we do.
The Tonight Show will not be seen tonight so that we may bring you the following NBC News special report.
I read in one of the newspapers this morning the headline, Cox Defiant. I do want to say that I don't feel defiant.
Good evening. The country tonight is in the midst of what may be the most serious constitutional crisis in its history. The president has fired the man you just saw, the special Watergate prosecutor, Archibald Cox. Because of the president's action, the attorney general has resigned. Elliot Richardson, who was appointed attorney general only last May in the midst of the Watergate scandals, has quit, saying he cannot carry out Mr. Nixon's instructions. Richardson's deputy, William Ruckelshaus, has been fired. Ruckelshaus refused in a moment of constitutional drama to obey a presidential order to fire the special Watergate prosecutor. In my career as a correspondent, I never thought I'd be announcing these things.
As a journalist, he says, I as a journalist never thought that I would be announcing these things. And that was, of course, how NBC announced the Saturday Night Massacre. I was listening to an interview earlier in the week, and quite a few of the guys who used to work in the Trump administration the Nixon administration, I guess they're one and the same now. So the folks that worked with that administration and the folks that worked against that administration, it wasn't that long ago. So quite a few of them are still alive. And I remember in the interview, they asked the gentleman, they said, "So what was it like to live through all of this?" And he said, the first thing we did after the firing was we got together and we started talking amongst ourselves. We said, can the Republic survive this? Now, take that compared with today. Obviously, what we're dealing with today is a lot worse. The one thing that Trump has that Nixon did not have is an entire Republican Party that is willing to fight for him and die for him. And some of the, such as Alex Jones, some of the pundits have even admitted that they're willing to die for one Donald Trump.
Tonight, President Nixon is scheduled to deliver his State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress. And at least part of it is expected to be on the state of Richard Nixon as well.
Mr. Nixon's goal, and it's a big one, is to convince Congress and the American people by his words tonight that despite Watergate, he is still in command of his office, that he can still govern this nation effectively.
Trump had his first State of the Union recently, and obviously to mixed reviews. But the bar has been lowered so much. I mean, as long as the guy didn't crap his pants on stage and throw it at the Democrats, they were going to call it a success. One of the interesting things about the State of the Union was not actually what happened in the State of the Union. PolitiFact is a fact-checking website. It's not one of the best ones, but it's definitely one of the best-known ones. And their servers absolutely crashed during the State of the Union because of people furiously fact-checking. That's the level of liar that we are dealing with right now. And when Trump did his State of the Union, he did not mention the Russia investigation. But it's obviously very much on his mind. And I know what it looks like right now, especially considering the previous segment, with as hard as the conservatives are working to protect him, to run interference for him. And this wasn't happening back during the 60s. There were Republicans that had to be convinced of Richard Nixon's criminality. But once it became obvious, They weren't defending him. They weren't running defense for him like these guys are. And so it seems like this particular thing that we may not get out of this, and the parallels with the Nixon presidency and with Donald Trump are pretty stark. But I say this, hold on. I think it's going to happen. So Richard Nixon got up at his State of the Union, his final State of the Union. It wasn't supposed to be his final the State of the Union, but it ended up being so. And he made mention of the investigation against him.
Mr. Speaker and Mr. President and my distinguished colleagues and our guests, I would like to add a personal word with regard to an issue that has been of great concern to all Americans over the past year. I refer, of course, to the investigations of the so-called Watergate affair. As you know, I have provided to the special prosecutor voluntarily a great deal of material. I believe that I have provided all the material that he needs to conclude his investigations and to proceed to prosecute the guilty and to clear the innocent. I believe the time has come to bring that investigation and the other investigations of this matter to an end. 1 year of Watergate is enough.
To extended applause, 1 year of the Russia investigation is enough. 1 year of Watergate is enough. And although he didn't say it from the State of the Union stage, he is saying the same thing in plenty of interviews, as well as repeating the word no collusion. Now look, ladies and gentlemen. You and I, well, if you listen to this show, you and I probably are the same. But for the most part, we're very different in this country. We're very divided. And we've begun identifying with people that do not have our best interests, our people that make money off our sweat and our labor, make money off of our ideas. These multi-billion dollar companies are multi-billion dollar companies because of us, the laborers, the workers. Once we realize our own worth and began to demand what we should be paid for that work, well, it'll be a more equitable society. But That's a problem for the factory owners. That's a problem for the billionaires. See, because you and I start banding together, say in, a union. You and I start talking and you and I start comparing notes. And you and I see that we are not all that different. And as a matter of fact, you as a Trump voter, and me as a guy who absolutely despises him and plans on urinating on his grave after he dies, you and I really aren't that different when it comes down to economics, when it comes down to how we feel about our families, and maybe even a lot of our interests. You and I are not that different, but you don't identify, you as a Trump voter, you don't identify with me. You identify with Trump. And it's pretty good that Trump doesn't care about you. He's not going to do any of the things that he said he was going to do. He's going to use a lot of racist rhetoric, but he's not going to do anything that you want him to do. But there you are, willing to fight and die for him. And it's not just Alex Jones. There's any number of gun nut videos across YouTube where these guys will get on there and they're ready to fight and die for Trump. You know, Roger Stone said if Trump is impeached, there's going to be a war. You know, there's going to be shooting. There's going to be fighting, you know, because we're not going down without a fight. You're not going down without a fight. You're willing to fight and die for Trump. You're identifying with your slave owner. And you're not the better for it. Now, I in the past have also been guilty of identifying with the Democrats. And in recent years, I have stopped identifying with them. And instead gotten involved with the party and pushed them towards more progressive directions. See, I used to see a Democrat winning an election as an automatic win for me. Then I would see the lobbying efforts. Then I would see the bills sponsored. Then I would see the bills passed. So I don't identify with them anymore. If anyone's going to get my vote, it's going to be them. But I'm pushing them in a more progressive direction. See, they're not my owners. And the power that Trump has over his voters, there's 30% of the country that will stick with him. No matter what, a small segment of them, maybe 3%, willing to absolutely fight and die for him. Their slave owner, their master. If you're an American, you're a human, and I'm assuming most folks in this audience are, you and I have a shared interest. The Democrats don't necessarily represent me. The Republicans sure as hell don't represent you. And I push for this kind of unity all the time. And I know it's a pipe dream. I know it's super unlikely that it's going to happen. But I'm creating a record here, a history that we'll all be able to look back at. Because I think even though I'm in the minority in realizing these things, I think eventually everyone else will realize them too. And I like doing this thing where I point back to the record that I created. See, Sean Hannity advising President Trump, Sean Hannity backing white supremacists. Yeah, I knew that was coming. Wrote a song back in 2005 about him. And I said that he identifies, so he wasn't open at that time about it, but I said he identifies with white supremacists and the white supremacist movement. And I'm pretty sure he would have been a friend of Hitler because he's anti-Semitic as well. And I caught a lot of flack for that, you know, the old Godwin's law, you know, the first person to, you know, loses the argument. But here we are all these years later, and he's trafficking in racism and white supremacy and anti-Semitism. And I get to throw my hands up and go, hey, y'all, want to hear a 13-year-old song? Yeah, I didn't think so. Is the Republic going to survive? Yeah. I think the Republic is going to survive. It's not going to be easy, but I think the Republic will survive. Will the Empire survive? That's a whole nother question. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being on the fire you can't put out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.